You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, July 24th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. On the program today, Cliff Schechter. Also on the program today, to give us a movie recommendation for the weekend, Isabel Gillies. And on the program today, the Republicans and one Democrat, maybe a couple, but really it looks like just one, grilling, well, not really grilling, pontificating, preening with Secretary of State John Kerry over the Iran deal. Another shooting in another theater, leaving three people dead. One of them was the 58-year-old shooter who shot himself. At least nine injured. Don't know too many details, although it does appear that this guy was a right-winger, Tea Party type. I'm sure there'll be a lot of speculation about the self-radicalization that's happening in the sleeper cells of those type of guys. That's in Louisiana. Also on the program today, Planned Parenthood under attack. Attempts by Republicans to defund Planned Parenthood. And some bizarre report about Sandra Bland, unconfirmed at this point. But that she may have had a large amount of marijuana in her system that she ingested in some fashion while in custody. Very strange and dubious. Also, the clown car rolls on. Donald Trump at the border. I don't even know what to say anymore. All that and more. Wanted to give you an update on a couple of stories that we have covered over the past couple of days. The one being over the vacation, we had Justin Elliott on to discuss the Red Cross in Haiti. And really, I mean, I have to say that, you know, I had sort of like a vague notion of just how bad the Red Cross was. But, look. I'll tell you this. I'll just speak for myself. I'm never giving them another dime ever. There are other charities out there that seem to be far more effective at what they do and have a lot more transparency. And as a follow-up to that story, apparently there are Senate calls for more transparency and basically to ask Red Cross, like, what did you do with all that money that you supposedly spent in Haiti? Additionally, a day or two ago, some internal documents from a Red Cross investigation were found and reported on by Justin Elliott again, showing that they didn't even know what happened to their money. Supposedly. it's a mess.
I remember when that happened, the catastrophe in Haiti. And I remember people putting out on social media, well-intentioned people.
Yes.
Like, don't just give to such and such random thing that's popping up. Make sure you give to the Red Cross and the resources get where they need to go. And the just unbelievable abuse of that brand and the trust people have in it, the unwarranted trust, is just stunning.
It is. It's the first place that I presume is the most effective. I mean, apparently, from what I understand, I mean, you can go back and listen to the Justin Elliott interview, but I know that Doctors Without Borders is highly reputable and effective. And then beyond that, apparently, you know, the idea is local NGOs tend to handle this stuff the best. But of course, it's a little bit more difficult. I mean, I think that's what the Red Cross plays off on. It's just got a great brand. Also, another update on, and I think this came up with the interview with James McCommons on Amtrak, but I know this has been discussed at different times over the months and the years on this program. And we've mentioned this, and you know, I keep finding myself at any given point over the course of doing political talk radio, there are different times where I slide into sort of like the same rant when I go out to dinner with people. And I went out to dinner with someone a couple of nights ago, Nikki and I did. And then Nikki always like sort of sequesters me, because if it's someone else who wants to talk politics, she's just like, I can't hear you talk anymore about politics. Just drives her crazy. And this person had the attitude of like, God, Donald Trump, what a joke, right? Like, why is he just getting out of the race?
Bad attitude to have in front of you.
Not a good attitude to have in front of me, because I was like, you think Donald Trump's a joke? How about, and then I went through my list of every other sort of ridiculousness of John McCain and Lindsey Graham. And I'm like, Chris Christie? I was like, do you have any idea what it's going to be like when one of those tunnels fails and people's property values in New Jersey, they can't get to work? It's going to screw up people's lives for 5 years. Talk about a joke. This guy walked away from a project to build another tunnel under the Hudson, and then basically seems to have used the money as a slush fund to the extent that he rejected it.
And that actually affects people's lives. Dramatically,
exactly my point. I'm like, oh, who cares? Donald Trump says stupid things on TV. Who cares? His policies are far less malignant than every single one of these candidates that are out there. And so, yeah, look at me. I'm already getting angry. And I'm just retelling the story. And this story, I saw, I guess it was yesterday, for the fourth day in a row, electrical problems on the century-old tunnels on the Hudson River, basically stranding and stymieing the commute of tens of thousands of New Jersey transit riders. People whose commute usually takes 25 minutes, taking 3 to 4 hours. And on top of that, if you're going from Washington to Boston, the busiest corridor of trains in the country, that's a choke point as well, those tunnels under the Hudson. And it's now, I mean, this is the beginning. And since Sandy, of course, these tunnels got even more corroded because you had more salt water in there. And it was Christie who quashed this, the ongoing, it had already started, planned to build these new tunnels, took whatever federal money was there and basically used it as a slush fund for the Port Authority. I mean, just unbelievable. So again, just an update, but also, you know, Don't tell me that Donald Trump is, you know, some type of monster. They're all monsters, frankly. Far worse than the bridge shutdown was this, but not quite as, I guess, yes, maybe, yes, illicit.
Not a felony.
No.
But worse.
All right, we've got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. Oh, wait a second. I should say this. Sorry. I forgot to mention this. You'll notice the other day when I went on Chris Hayes, I looked very well shaven. And I'll tell you how I managed that magic. I've mentioned Harry's many times before. Well, I mean, the reality is that before I started to promote Harry's, they sent me a blade, a handle, three sets of blades, and shaving cream. And I've been using it, and it's great. I don't shave that often, but when I do, I use my Harry's razor. And it's significantly cheaper than buying the razors in, you know, whatever it is, the Duane Reade or wherever I go down the street.
Adds up.
It adds up. And for this, you can get a starter set, the same set that I had, for $15. You get the razor, you get a shaving cream, three blades, you know, the, what do you call it? Those like cartridge blades. And if it's the first time you've ever gotten Harry's, use the promo code Majority Report, you get $5 off of that. So $10. And Noah, I'm looking at you. Somebody needs a shave. I hope your parents didn't hear that you've been coming into work unshaven. That's really...
Look at Matt's father beard over here.
That's true. But I don't think he's going to shave for about 3 years. Go to harrys.com now, and Harry will give you $5 off if you type in the coupon code Majority Report for your first purchase. Otherwise, just go and get the set of blades. Well, you already know that it's worth it. Harrys.com, enter the coupon code Majority Report, check out for $5 off. Start shaving better today, or shave like I do, which is every, like, I don't know, fifth, sixth day. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Cliff Schechter. We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, on Fridays, it hasn't happened for a while because of vacation and because of, at least for me, I treat myself. It's a treat for me to welcome this guy to the program. And the one way that I mark that treat is by listening to this song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Oh my God, the whole studio was singing along with that song. Hello, Cliff. It's been too long.
That sexy of a little ditty that you really can't not get into it.
It's true.
I'm sure Michael was air guitaring it. You know, Binder probably has the kid singing it now.
Yes.
Kid can't say anything, can't do anything but spit up crap, but he's singing my song.
There you go. There you go. We inculcate them.
Congrats, Binder boy.
Imagine if Schechter's his first word.
Schechter.
Or actually LLC.
Poor kid.
We inculcate them very, very early around here. So, Cliff, all right, look, we've got a lot to talk about today. Regular listeners of this program know that you have spent a significant amount of time over the past 4 or 5 years, professionally speaking, working on advocating for some form of gun control. And over the years that you have been coming onto this program, it seems like we can't go more than 4 or 5 weeks without talking about the latest massacre.
We can't. In fact, you and I were on. I mean, I brought this up before, so this is nothing new. But you and I were on air while Newtown happened.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that when we just were getting the early reports. And, you know, it's funny, I just had the same conversation because I go on these talks once every sort of, I don't know, probably about 6 weeks to 8 weeks on Virtually Speaking, which you may be familiar with.
Yes.
And with Jay Aykroyd, and I'm going on Sunday night, you know, with David Waldman, a.k.a. Cagro X of Daily Coast and other various media properties. And we had this whole plan to talk about a whole bunch of things. And, you know, he does a whole series on, he's been doing it since Newtown, on accidental shootings, which was covered eventually by the New York Times, the New Yorker, and other stuff, where he just keeps track of that information. And so he was like, all right, I guess our plans are thrown to the wind once again, you know, and that's exactly what it is. You literally can't go. I mean, this is ludicrous. How anybody can be, I mean, if getting beyond the absolute, the compassion for poor people who are, you know, not poor people, people who are stuck in this situation, who are victims of random acts of violence. I mean, you know, what more do you need? Charleston, Chattanooga, this. I can think of a half dozen others we're not talking about. Most people have probably never heard of, because they're not infamous, because only 2 or 3 people were shot. And that's not a mass killing. It has to be at least 4. You know what I mean? Like, we don't even hear about it. And if it doesn't happen in some sort of a venue where it's happened before, so there's more coverage. This reminds people of Aurora, so there's more coverage.
Right.
The military-based attack reminds people of Fort Hood, so there's more coverage. And obviously that's a national security thing. But plenty of things. If it just happens in somebody's house in a neighborhood somewhere where an angry, you know, father shows up and shoots his whole family and kills them, we never hear about it. That just happened in Columbus, Ohio, like about a month ago. I'm trying to remember exactly when it was. Some father killed like 3 or 4 members of his family. I mean, these things I mean, this is ridiculous, you know, and that's the thing that's so – this is not a mystery. Every other democracy, modern democracy, has figured this out because there's nothing to figure out. It literally is just people who have science and information and data arguing against crazy people. People who, if you applied them to any other dangerous product in this country, if you applied them to airplanes, you know, there'd be no FAA. You know, that wouldn't be allowed. People would be able to drink and just, you know, and take off from the airport. Nobody would care. That would be acceptable. You know what I mean? Forget your seat being a flotation device. Your seat might actually eat you.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's the way we treat this one issue, different than everything else. And it's so stupid and it's so ridiculous. And I happen, you know, I've studied abroad a couple of times, so I have friends from other countries. And I just have to keep answering these questions like, what the F is wrong with you people? You know, when will you do something? It's obvious. Everyone's done it. You know, who's had this problem? Australia. You know, we've been through this before. Port Arthur massacre. They're having one massacre a year before that.
Right.
Strict gun control laws passed in the wake of the Port Arthur massacre. Have not had one since. Their suicide rate and accidental shooting rate and the homicide rates have all gone down respectively by somewhere in the 60, 70, 80% range, you know, with guns. This is like you know, this is just common sense. And I mean, it's almost like, I mean, look, we're, you know, I get to just, after a while, I just get so frustrated with this. It doesn't mean that we're not making a ton of progress. I always have to make sure that I say that to people, that as bad as it is, it could be actually a lot worse. I mean, if we have the NRA's world, if we have the Tea Party's world, and we'll get to that, by the way, the shooter was a member of the Tea Party. What a shock, because, you know, they're not racist. They're just, like, honest Americans fighting for, like, freedom and stuff. And you know, if we lived in their world, take all the numbers we have right now, take all the mass shootings, you probably could multiply that out a number of times. It would be that much worse because of the over 2 million people that have been stopped who shouldn't be, have been buying guns by the Brady Law and many other ways that we've stopped people. But we're riddled with loopholes. We don't try to stop people. We allow the NRA all too often still in the states and too much federally to dictate the agenda. So it's like we make improvements, but it's, you know, little by little. We pass, you know, we pass strong bills in Oregon and Washington and Delaware and a couple other states. But in the meantime, so many other states aren't passing these things. So many other states aren't fixing those loopholes. And the rest of us suffer because as the idiots who tried to attack me on Twitter last night were like, see, it doesn't work. Gun control doesn't work, you know, except for in like every other country, of course, and the fact that in Hawaii, which has that weird thing where you can't drive there on a road and smuggle guns in there. You know, I mean,
I'll tell you what really strikes me is that, you know, there has been multiple interviews now I've seen. I think the last one just came out today in the BBC with Obama, where he has basically reiterated that his inability to get Congress to do anything about guns has been one of his biggest frustrations. And I actually take that at face value. It is such a strange dynamic, and I know that you know there's a fairly straightforward answer as to why this happens, but I don't know of any other issue where when I'm out and about with civilians, as it were, outside of my sort of little hermetically sealed political bubble, where people react more viscerally than to stuff like this. And it seemingly would be the easiest issue to deal with because there seems to be such near uniform – I mean, obviously
– There's unanimity on, you know, I mean, closing the terror gap, which is what allows people who are on terrorist watch lists and can't get on airplanes to still buy guns. Passing universal background checks, so everyone has to go through a background check before they get a gun, and changing the definition of domestic violence to include certain groups not included currently, which a lot of people don't know, including stalkers. Yes, that's true. You can stalk somebody, have a restraining order against you, still get a gun. Mm. You know, I mean, things like that, misdemeanor domestic violence, still get a gun. Those things, the three things I just mentioned, all in every state, everywhere, have north of 80% support. And they have north of like 70% support among gun owners. And so the fact that you can't start off just passing those three things, then the fact that another measure that would take care of some of these things, and the fact that I'm going to say this because I think most people will say, what? We don't have that, which is making people who you know, report lost or stolen guns. That's right. You don't have to do that now in many states. That's a state-by-state thing. I mean, this is just ridiculous. You know, making dealers, very small percentage of dealers account for almost the vast majority of guns that get into criminals' hands. They're running criminal enterprises. We could use RICO laws against them, I'm sure. We could certainly have the ATF and the FBI and others go in and monitor the backdoor sales that are going out where these guys are marking up the price and selling things out the back door. But we have all these restrictions that the NRA got passed a number of years ago and keep getting passed through again through amendments that won't allow the ATF to do their job. I mean, they didn't have somebody running the ATF for 7 years because the NRA wouldn't allow anybody to do it. Finally, we beat them on that vote in the Senate. We beat them on a vote to have somebody run the frickin' organization that tracks this stuff.
Right.
So, I mean, imagine, like, if, you know, when you think about all the things that you or I would get in trouble with if we did to our kids, you know? Like, I think if I slapped my kid across the face in public, something that I have no intention of doing, by the way, but if I did, I would be put in prison. I think if I handed my child a gun in public – in a place that allows public open carry, I would not be. I mean, you know, it's the stupidest thing in the world. If I handed my kid a gun in public and they shot themselves, it'd be like, well, they're going through enough already. You know, it's a difficult time for those parents. We definitely shouldn't prosecute. I mean, that's what you get. It's just it's this deference to this industry and this culture that is – it's not – there's sort of – and that was, you know, when I had those critiques in the past of Bernie Sanders. I'm not trying to get into the whole thing with Bernie again. I'm just saying there's rural culture, which exists, by the way, in other countries where people own rifles and shotguns and hunt that nobody is interested in messing with. I couldn't care less. I used to sport shoot. I've got the little medals here. I was on a team. I enjoyed it. Which is safe, and you know that, and people, you know, people take precautions, and you know, I remember a kid on our rifle range one year turned around when he was up on the range with an empty rifle in his hand that wasn't loaded. He was thrown off the range and off the team for the entire summer. You know, where people don't mess around with those kinds of things. Well, that's not what we're talking about here. You know, we're talking about a sick, anti-government, white supremacy fueled, because this guy was a white supremacist, just like the guy in Charleston, you know, situation where you've got where guns are literally almost like an appendage for people. It is part of their very definition of who they are. They buy guns just because the liberals hate them, and it shows they're a tough, manly man. And some of these guys, shockingly, have mental issues or are just racists or are terrible people. And this happens. This guy had a previous criminal record. I don't know all the details yet. I know he had a previous criminal record. I know he had a Tea Party page. I know he was looking for white nationalist groups to join. The very definition of probably the vast majority of these guys, exactly what that report that was released by the Department of Homeland Security was talking about under Janet Napolitano, that then all the right-wingers freaked out, cried, and got into the fetal position and said, Obama's coming to hurt me, and then we had to pull that report, even though this is a national security issue.
Well, I mean, exactly. I mean, it's stunning to me because, you know, after Newtown, if that didn't get any change, it's hard to imagine what will. But I think, you know, ultimately what will be just perseverance. I mean, you know, there you can look around whether it's not these are not obviously the same issues. But I mean, if you look to how quickly in some respects, I mean, in some other respects, not. But, you know, 8 years ago, the idea that we would have marriage equality across the country was very far-fetched, at least in my mind. The idea that we would get $15 an hour for fast food workers in New York State. I mean, when those folks started striking across, starting in New York City and across the country, you know, people thought that it was going to be a much longer haul, and so. One never knows, and one has to keep up persevere. And
it's not just never knows. I will say very clearly, someone that kind of at the heart, you know, in terms of knowing people in this movement and knowing, I mean, there's massive change going on. Again, even background checks passed by the number of state legislatures and overwhelmingly on ballot measures would have been unthinkable a half dozen years ago. Nevada, which was a Western, you know, gun state, we've got a measure on the ballot. The NRA is trying to do everything they can to block it, to undermine it, because they're going to lose the way they lost in Washington State. There may be one on the ballot there's a few other states I know people are looking at, Arizona, Maine, a few others. There may be ballot measures in, you know, we've won a number of federal votes, like what I was talking about before, blocked some of their worst things. I mean, in very crazy gun states where they're trying to put guns on campus, which I know should be a no-brainer, but we're talking about people with no brains. And we've blocked them in almost every state. So, you know, in businesses banning guns on their premises, there's a lot going in the positive direction. There's a huge grassroots organization now with Moms Demand Action, every single member of whom is a one-issue voter, just like on what they have on the other side. So it's not to say there isn't massive change. Of course, the problem is with this thing is that while that change is going on, people die. Because of the changes we don't have. I mean, and you hear about it, right? While the $15 minimum wage doesn't happen, there still are terrible things going on, too. There's people being underpaid and exploited, but that's not reported necessarily every day in the same fantastic way. You know what I mean? So that's the thing, is that that cultural change that led to that $15 minimum wage, that led to gay marriage, that's now led to criminal justice sentences being looked at and us trying to sort of move a little bit away from the war on drugs and legalization of marijuana, or certainly medicinal marijuana, things like that, that were all unthinkable. I mean, the same thing's happening on guns. The problem is, I think it's hard to realize it sometimes because something like this happens, and many of something like this happen. but and it could be because there's so many guns out there. But it will I have absolutely no doubt with demographics, with the fact that, sadly, you know, look, I've got a number of friends now who are shooting victims or have lost family members. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, I'm very involved in this, so I'm somebody much more likely to. But the way it got to a point where everybody knew somebody who was gay, and it was sort of hard to say, oh, don't believe in gay rights, you know, just because of some silly reason. It'll get there with this because this isn't stopping. We've tripled the number of mass shootings since 2011. That's only going to keep happening. I mean, this stuff, as heavier, as more technology, this is one area where technology isn't necessarily our friend. As more technology is out there, worse and worse weaponry is going to get out there. And if we don't do anything about it, more and more people are going to be killed. I mean, that's just a fact. I don't know if you saw where some kid sent up a handgun and a drone the other day.
Yeah, but I did.
He did. Well, you know, next maybe that's an assault weapon. Next maybe that's, you know, who knows what that is? Who knows how many people die? I mean, there will be a point here where it will just become undeniable that we're an incredibly unsafe society. Maybe people from Europe will stop coming here. Maybe people from states with better laws will stop going to the ones with the crazy laws. But it's going to happen because this is going to get outrageous. It's just going to keep getting worse. You know? Right. So I think the laws will hopefully continue to improve, and all I can hope for is that we don't lose as many as we could lose.
Now I want to get to talk a little bit about the Iran deal, and I don't know if that you and I have really had too much time to talk about Donald Trump. That may end up having to wait for another week, but hopefully we'll get there. But one story I have not covered that much, and it's important that We talk about this because we've seen what has happened when you don't really sort of pay attention to these things in terms of like what happened to Acorn and other organizations that have been targeted in this way. And I know that you sit on the board, I think, of Planned Parenthood in Ohio, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct.
And so I wanted to talk to you about this because we have one of those situations where – and it seems like this an entity was formed, like an LLC, and a guy basically created a fictional company
like
for 2 years and went around to like these these conferences and whatnot as a way of sort of laying the groundwork to do an undercover video scam on executives at Planned Parenthood. There was obviously the requisite editing and whatnot. And there's also, frankly, just sort of like taking stuff that is perfectly that is perfectly legal and typical and making it seem nefarious. There's a lot of that going on. But now we have, you know, Boehner's talking about defunding Planned Parenthood. We have a bill that was out there that was supposedly going to provide family planning services to veterans and military personnel that had to be scrapped because of this. Tell us what this is all about with Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, you know, look, I mean, we know what's happened. As you pointed out, Acorn, remember, with MoveOn, there have been a number of these attempts by the Breitbart crew and O'Keefe and these people, people are tied to them. So these people, by definition, are fraudulent and dishonestly and deceptively edit videos. And O'Keefe is a borderline criminal he took a plea.
I don't know if he was convicted. I'm not sure exactly.
Did he take a plea for what he did in Mary Landrieu's office when he bugged her office?
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, we're dealing with completely dishonest individuals to begin with. We know remember the Shirley Sherrod video and how they edit these videos. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, this is, you know, if you have to follow the breadcrumbs of this stuff to take from an old tale. You follow the breadcrumbs in terms of what does the right do? Well, they attack power centers on the left, right? They made tort reform a big thing and the McDonald's case and all of that. I know you had Susan Saldoff on your show way back when. I did PR for her film, Hot Coffee, which is a great film, by the way, because they realized that trial lawyers gave a lot of money to Democrats and at the same time went after their friends in business. So perfect thing to do. And they trumped up all this stuff, no pun intended, of course, and they tried to to pass tort reform, which they did in a number of states, to hurt trial lawyers. You know, same thing more recently with trying to fabricate reasons to go after unions. They target power centers. So Planned Parenthood is something that used to be a very bipartisan organization. Barry Goldwater was on the board for a while, and you'd find numerous other Republicans who were supporters of Planned Parenthood, including the Bush family, the older members of the Bush family, the Portman family at one point here in Ohio. But they now view it as something that is, you know, they donate money to progressive candidates and causes on the through the political arm. And they know it's a way to fire up the crazies among their troops, just to create some video and make it seem like people are selling, you know, body parts, you know, and things like that. So they deceptively edited this video to make it seem, and when you saw the longer form video, so that it, they made it sound exactly the opposite, is that there that it is legal for there to be tissue donations. Because doing research on tissue, like with, you know, just the way I can donate organs when I pass away, doing this kind of research is something that helps all of us. It's not allowed to be sold. And frankly, I mean, in some states, it's not even allowed to be. In Ohio, for example, you can't even donate or give it. But in a number of others, you can. So, you know, so basically they set this up to try to make this look like this grisly kind of black market that doesn't exist.
Right.
I mean, it may exist, but Planned Parenthood's not involved in it. And they deceptively edited this, and you can tell the politicians we know now knew about this for months. This thing's a year old. They knew about it for months, and they all sprang into action with their press releases right after this video came out. You know, Mike DeWine, former senator, current attorney general of this state, right away, we're going to investigate Planned Parenthood, and he's been an anti-choice nut who is traveling around on the anti-birth control circuit trying to get that case in front of the Supreme Court, the Hobby Lobby case, to take away people's birth control. So the zealots on the other side, this is what they've been doing, and you know, and it's happened in a number of other states with attorneys general and governors calling for this, and you're seeing it in Congress. They have to create this kind of stuff, just like, you know, they have to find all sorts of crazy things on the left because they're on the negative side of all of these issues. I mean, the majority of people are pro-choice, and it's a strong majority, right? I mean, believe it, if you count people who believe in some restrictions, but certainly are basically in favor of early abortion, then, you know, the kinds of things we all wish that we could do to prevent women from having to wait later and be in more difficult situations, then you get a very strong majority. But these guys, of course, are doing just the opposite, right? I mean, they claim they're quote-unquote pro-life. We don't have to go into their love of the death penalty and bombing Iraq and guns and every other reason why they're not pro-life. But if you were pro-life and you didn't want a woman to be forced economically into a situation where she might have to abort a child so that she could continue working because that's the only way she can support herself, you'd support paid family leave now, wouldn't you? If you didn't want a woman to get in that situation to begin with, you'd look at all the
Well, you wouldn't even attack contraceptive to begin with. I mean,
right.
look the bottom line is
say abstinence education fails
yes.
miserably.
I mean, look, the
you know, let's call it what it is. You know, it's Palin education.
But let's cut to the quick here. I mean, the bottom line is that we know what inspires these people is this notion that women need to be punished for having sex.
That's
and
right.
their punishment in their mind is like paying the piper, like the consequences of sex is that you are forced to, if you get pregnant, you are forced to become a mother. And that is basically, that is what it comes down to. Now, that aside, we should also say that, like, look, there are, the fact of the matter is that abortions are legal. They are a function of a woman having the sovereignty over her own body and her own destiny and saying, like, this is what I either decide not to become a mother or I do. And at the end of the day, one of two things are going to happen with the tissue involved in ending a pregnancy. And that is it's going to be disposed of through the medical procedures that they dispose of tissue, or it's going to be donated with some compensation to cover the costs of shipping and preserving that tissue in a way so that it can be used. And it's going to be used to help the health of people. and yeah. and of people who have been born. And so that's basically it. And so this, you know, that's they're trying to make a controversy out of this thing. And in the context of, I mean, you know, this is one of those situations where, yeah, you, thank you, Donald Trump, because Donald Trump has eaten up all
that's
the oxygen.
Exactly true. Donald Trump's taken the
eaten
energy
up,
away from their attack.
Absolutely, because he's eaten
as
up all
has,
the oxygen.
And I think that's one of the reasons they did this. They released it when they did, by the way. I think they were hoping, with all the negative attention to Donald Trump, you know, to take to move attention away from that, so people wouldn't be paying as close attention to that, and it shows how mystical the negative attention ability of Donald Trump is, that he can even get the media to stop looking at this story. So you're right. I mean, I'll just put a bow on this by saying I was listing various ways, but every single way you could lessen the number of abortions out there, the way Scandinavian countries, other Western European countries have, to great effect. I'll give one quick case. In Colorado, a private donor gave $23 million so that 30,000 IUD implants could be provided for lower-income women. The abortion rate between 2009 and 2013 went down 42% among teenagers, and the teenage unintended pregnancy rate went down 40%. It's easy. We know how to, just like what I said with the gun.
Yes, but I mean, look, it's quite clear.
If all they cared about was abortion, we could solve that tomorrow.
Right,
not
of course.
Care about their
right.
liars.
But those young women who were having sex, they weren't taking the consequences of it. I mean, you know, we are, I am quite convinced that there are people who are, you know, are genuinely concerned about reducing the number of abortions. I mean, and, you know, I would also like to reduce the number of all medical procedures if we could do that. But at the end of the day, that's not what motivates the vast majority, or at least a large, a significant amount of these people. It is to control women because of the way that they perceive the world, that women
right.
should not be going around there getting all sexy time without
right.
any consequences, because then it's the devil has taken over, and there's no longer the proper respect to daddy and all that. I mean, it's all just
the
sort
stuff
of,
that these guys have nightmares about. It's
right.
basically white men losing power, which is
yeah.
you know, why they need their large penis guns too.
Yes,
I'll
exactly.
just say to people quickly, and let's go, we can move to the next topic. I just want to say, I mean, obviously I'm a board member, but I'm a board member for that reason, because I care so much about this issue. It's not, you don't get paid to be on the Planned Parenthood board, and now you get a lot of flack for it. So I would just ask anybody listening, you know, whatever you can do, both if it's emotional support, if it's moral support, or if it's financial support, support your Planned Parenthood, because we're the last line between you and Rick Santorum. So keep that in mind.
Let's talk about what's going on with this Iran deal. Yesterday there was a hearing in, I think, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and we have a montage of what we heard during the hearings. It's from the Guardian newspaper. Let's play it. First we're going to hear from Bob Corker, then Ben Cardin. And then we'll hear from John Kerry again. But we'll stop. I mean, it really is. I mean, people have been very critical of this hearing because it was just really just sort of grandstanding. And the real question is going to come down to where are some of the Democrats going to fall on this? Cardin is very interesting because he's sort of he's been sort of AIPAC-ish. Is that the best way to put that? In the past. And Schumer also is going to be interesting to see. I think at the end of the day, you know, it appears that the Democrats are going to sort of fall in line, and this deal is going to go through, which, of course, is going to make it very difficult for one of your bete noirs, John McCain, to top his record, his records in terms of showing up on Sunday morning talk shows. But be that as it may,
that's making you feel bad for him.
Let's start with Bob Corker, who really does unleash a corker with this analogy. It is
nicely played.
Thank you. It is. I mean, maybe we'll stop it after the audio to parse what he's really trying to say here. But let's start with this audio.
From my perspective, Mr. Secretary, I'm sorry. Not unlike a hotel guest that leaves only with a hotel bathrobe on his back, I believe you've been fleeced.
Okay, let's just stop it there for a second. Let's just stop it there.
I'm getting into sexy fantasy
talk. No, this is Corker, and so
that was Corker. I thought it was Graham.
No, that was Corker, and now there's two things about this. One, when you go to a hotel and you leave with their bathrobe, in addition to the time that you were able to spend at the hotel, you're walking away, you're still in their bathrobe. Now,
have you ever seen Beverly Hills Cop?
Yeah. Now, Michael thinks he's figured it out, that what Corker's actually saying is that somehow he also lost all his clothes. So he stayed at the hotel, which he paid for, and somehow they stole his clothes and he left with a bathrobe. Now, I don't understand in what world this, like, I don't understand like how the mechanics of that. But even if Corker could actually explain his analogy, he would be lying, because the United States gave up nothing. The reason why this is not a treaty, but rather an agreement, is because the United States is giving nothing. There's no outlay of anything. All it is that the president has decided that he is going to exercise his statutory authority to drop the roadblocks that have been put up in terms of sanctions with the Iranians. So we have given up nothing. We don't lose our clothes. We don't gain a bathrobe. We have just decided to go forward. All right.
Did we not negotiate free bathrobes in this deal?
Well, that if Kerry didn't get any bathrobes, like a nice Persian bathrobe? Are you kidding me?
Okay. You could see Kerry with a nice bathrobe smoking the pipe.
Exactly.
And like,
that would be a huge mistake. All right, let's continue with the audio.
In the process of being fleeced, what you've really done here is you have turned Iran from being a pariah to now Congress. Congress being a pariah.
In the following week, and we'll get outside experts. Many of us have taken advantage. I looked at the framework that was agreed to in April and looking at the final agreements that we've gotten today, and our negotiators got an awful lot, particularly on the nuclear front, which is beyond my expertise. We got things that there were many rumors during these last couple months of what was going to be in this agreement and how it was going to be weakened from the April framework that, in fact, have been strengthened since the April framework.
Okay, stop it right there. That was Ben Cardin, and the reason why that's encouraging is, like I say, he's an AIPAC guy, and this is the sort of script. This is how they get to, we're going to support the president. I was very skeptical during the entire process, but now when I see the end product, I got to tell you, I'm surprised things have come out good. That's the way you play it. From a political standpoint, if you want to show, I was skeptical all along. I was never a total buy-in. Now, of course, this is all sort of theater on some level, but that's the way politics are. I was always sort of skeptical, but now I see that at the end of the day, this is actually a legitimate deal. Let's continue. We're going to hear from Kerry.
And us believing that that's where it came from them.
Moreover, if the U.S., after laboriously negotiating this multilateral agreement with five other partners, were to walk away from those partners, we're on our own. Our partners will not walk away with us. Instead, they will walk away from the tough multilateral sanctions regime that they've helped to put in place. And we will have squandered the best chance we have to solve this problem through peaceful means.
Sacrifice to their families. And we thank you very much for your.
But the fact is that Iran now has. We all don't like it. But whether we like it or not, Iran has developed experience with a nuclear fuel cycle. They have developed the ability to produce the fissile material for a bomb. And we can't bomb that knowledge away. The two uranium pathways, the one plutonium pathway, and the covert pathway. So this isn't a question of giving them what they want. I mean, it's a question of how do you hold their program back?
Okay.
How do you dismantle their weapons program? Not their whole program. Let's understand what was really on the table here. We set out to dismantle their ability to be able to build a nuclear weapon. And we've achieved that.
Okay. All right. So let's end it there. So, I mean, there it is, basically. There's two other points, big points that Kerry makes at that point. One is that if we don't make a deal, the regime, the sanctions regime falls apart. We can't control the rest of the world to maintain these sanctions, even though there was a deal on the table, right? Because that was why we said to start the sanctions in the first place. Let's force them to the table, get rid of their nukes. And then he says, like, look, you know, and if that happens and the sanctions walk away, in terms of what's left for us, we can bomb Iran and maybe we can get them down to where this agreement gets them if we bomb them properly, which I don't think is the case. But
proper bombing.
Right. If we have this special pinpoint Superman Lex Luthor bombing regime, you know, plan, we can get them down to where it is now. But then they just rebuild it and they do it at double time. And if they have the ability, like everybody, you know, like the opponents of this deal say, like, well, they have secret sites and secret mines and secret places where they can get this. Well, if we bomb the ones we know, they're just going to ramp up the secret ones because they're actually superhero supervillains.
Yes,
so
they can do everything.
And so this is pretty encouraging stuff because I get the sense that this is we're seeing a lot of posturing, we're seeing a lot of preening, but at the end of the day,
well, those on the as you pointed out, those who sort of on the left, particularly who are Jewish and you know who are Democrats, who are kind of caught in their minds, at least, even though most American Jews are very much in favor of this, between their constituency and what they believe, and the rest have to do some of this posturing. But in the end, you know, it's the right that's turned foreign policy, something they claim they would never do, really into a political issue.
Right.
Even the more moderate, so-called moderate Republicans like Mark Kirk are crazy on this stuff. And, you know, they're probably doing it. Mark Kirk wants to get reelected. I'm sure there's some you know, motivation there and for some of the other ones. But in the end, there's really two principles here at work. One is we can't go to war with everybody. I mean, you've got people here pretending it's like George W. Bush getting up and giving out his list of bad guys and with no sort of discernibility for who's who and no nuance and whatever. It doesn't matter. Sunni, Shia, you're all the same.
Right.
Because really, in the end, what this comes down to is Saudi Arabia versus Iran. And this is playing out in Syria, and this is playing out in Yemen, and this is playing out in many other places. And we've always been allies.
Anbar province, I would argue.
Yeah, exactly. Because Saudi Arabia gives us oil, yay, we like you, and we'll defend you, and you know, whatever. But they argue that Iran, which certainly has a terrible human rights record and does support certain terrorist organizations, has a worse record than the guys were, you know, who are beheading people in the streets and who are a spiritual, at least motivator for ISIS on many levels, and who 15 of the 19 hijackers and Osama bin Laden came from, and there's all sorts of ties we'll never find out about because of redacted reports, is ridiculous. Basically what this does is it allows us to become closer to a different group that actually is much more moderate and has a better chance of ending up becoming a realistic sort of, at least not completely secular, but a democracy in the manner of which Turkey is, which is not to say perfect, but at least heading in the direction that we would want some of these countries hopefully to head in, because we know how religion and politics tend to mix. And that's what's going on here. The second point is the other group of people that just want to go to war everywhere. You know, I remember you had said this at one point, Sam, about Iraq. And I've come around to your view on this. I just think they're that evil, which is I don't think they want it to work. You know, I think you had said that back then. The chaos is better for them. Because anybody who really wanted things to work in the Middle East and took an honest look at what you know, the fact that we've got Afghanistan on one side of Iran and we've got Iraq on the other side, we certainly screwed the pooch on both of those. So what do we want to do now? We want to screw up we want to blow up the place, take out the government, create chaos in the one in the middle with how many? 60 million people in Iran, disproportionately young people who can fight if need be. Does that make any sense whatsoever to just blow up this region? I mean, all we did, if we were so anti-Iran, is strengthen them with what we did in Iraq. So, I mean, what's the strategy here? What's the policy? Where's the consistency on anything? There is none. It's just blow crap up because maybe that helps the Halliburtons of the world. I don't know. I'd like to not have that cynical world and to not think these are bloodthirsty, just vampires. But maybe that's just what we're dealing with here because I have no other explanation for why anyone would want to go to war with Iran, seeing the mass failure of what we did in Iraq and think that this would turn out any better and not exacerbate an already explosive situation.
Well, if it gets you on a Sunday talk show. Cliffy!
I guess there's that, too. That's worth it always. Yeah, you know, 100,000 dead for 15, 20 minutes with Chuck Todd. Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Cliffy, often depressing, but always a pleasure to talk to you.
Sorry. I wish we didn't have to end on that, but you end up making fun of Donald Trump. But maybe we'll have to save that for next week.
I think we'll have plenty of time to do that. Cliff Schechter, always a pleasure. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for having me on, man.
All right, talk to you soon. Bye. Bye. All right, folks, going to take a quick break. When we come back, Isabel Gillies will be joining us. Oh, and let me tell you something. Today, after the show, immediately after the show, in fact, as soon as the final music of the show plays, we're going to have our premiere episode of Ask the Intern. Noah will be sitting in this seat. I'm going to shut down the IM machine after we take the round of IMs. I'm going to re-up the IM machine, and you will send Noah questions, and he will answer your questions, and it'll also be live on YouTube. And then we're going to, you know, probably cut it up and make it a little cleaner, and then repost it as a YouTube exclusive.
I think this might be the debut of Noah visually for everybody. Yeah, it's the first time Noah will be on the Majority Report
screen. I hope the camera works. I hope the camera works. I don't know. We don't know if he can be captured on video.
Hopefully he could handle him, yes.
We know he can be captured on audio, but we don't know if he can be captured on video. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Isabel Gillies. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, if Matt can take his head and his attention out of Hulk Hogan's derriere for just a moment, he will tee up the song that was written specifically for our next guest. And here it is.
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two. to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know. Listen to the picks from Isabel. IsabelGillies.com.
You know, Isabel Gillies, I have to say that even since that song has been written, the amount of opportunity to stream different movies has undergone like a revolution.
Do you know that just during that playing of it, I thought, oh, it's an outdated song.
It's amazing how simpatico we are.
It's just, even though we're in different states. No, I was just thinking it because it's Netflix, but also Amazon,
mm-hmm.
but also all those ones.
You really have gotten technologically literate since we last spoke.
Listen, I couldn't even listen to the show because our internet is so slow that I can't even get it.
Now, you're visiting your folks up in Maine, right?
Correct.
And they're in a rather remote region.
It's remote in terms of internet service, yes. So you can't, it's internet's very spotty.
And you are, in fact, speaking to me through a CB radio, is that correct?
This is true. This is true. No, but the funny thing is I'm speaking to you on a landline telephone, and because we're here in the land of the landlines, the children ages...
they don't know how to dial the phone.
They not only can they not dial it, they can. So this is the one where you had to push to get a direct line out. You have to push a button, and then you get a line.
Wait, what?
Because there are two lines, right? You know, there's like two phone numbers connected to one phone.
My God, where are you? Did you transport back to like 1972?
Right, that's what I'm saying. So they have no idea. So we had to do huge lessons just in dialing. And they try and dial really fast like they're texting. I'm like, no, that's not going to work with this. You have to push it. You have to push it like it's not a touch screen. You have to make sure it engages. And, like, you can kind of feel that with your finger.
You have to teach him to dial one, too, right, before the area.
Yeah, that's right. One, and then the area code. And then here, it's an island, and the same three numbers are for every single person.
The first three numbers, the exchange, right?
The exchange. So they only have to know the last four numbers, but they can't really get that. It's like they just can't understand it, and then when they do, you get them so that they are connected with the other person, then it's like it's very hard for them to speak on the phone. They don't, it's sort of like our parents.
It's hard for them to speak? Oh, because they don't have, it's not FaceTime.
Right, it's not, and it's not texting. They don't really talk on the phone, so there's two or three generations ago, if they called Europe, they would speak like this. Hello! Can you hear me?
Right.
Like that. So that's how they're talking now. I said, you don't have to yell. They can hear you.
Saul cannot talk on the phone unless there's FaceTime. Like he's just like, it doesn't completely register. I mean, Mila, you know, understands that there's two different things, but she also not terribly interested in non-FaceTime communications. We're in that era now where it's
so weird. And then my parents.
I mean, I remember the video phone. I remember specifically back in the day when I was involved with Sarah Silverman. So this is, you know, many, many years ago. And she had gotten as a gift from somebody a video phone. This is like 20 years ago now. A video phone that you like was a wired phone. And I'm like, what is the point? First of all, who's ever going to use this? Second of all, there's nobody you can talk to with it because nobody else has another one.
Nobody has it.
And I was like, this isn't going to be, you know, that was like, I remember back around then pretending to have a cell phone as a joke, like walking around with a fake cell phone as a joke because it seemed so ridiculous to me.
Well, you should have maybe thought a little harder about that one.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things I could say about that, frankly. But there's a lot of things I should have thought about.
But the other, so last night we're at dinner with my parents, and the 11-year-old says, "Well, I want to, you know, none of the cell phones work here even." So he's like, "Well, I want to hang out with my friend, you know, Julian." And I said, "Well, give him a call." So that was like, and my mother was like, "What? He doesn't know how to do that? Like, what's the matter with you?" And I said, "No, he can't do it. And we can't do it." We went through the whole thing. And I said, "Here's another thing. They don't watch television." And my mother was like, "What? What are you talking about?" I said, "They don't watch television. Like, if you, it's almost a punishment to say, all right, you're going to watch television." You know? And she's like, she couldn't, you know, comprehend it because she spent her whole adult life telling us we couldn't watch television or, right, like, restricting it or all. So it's, they both were completely mind blown. They don't understand.
So what are the kids, what do your kids do? They play video games.
No. Well, I'm so, you know, we've talked about this. I'm like so restrictive of it. And it's the summer, so they're up here, so it's very, you know, like there's a dock and we figured out there was barnacles on the dock. You know what a barnacle is?
I know what a barnacle is, yes.
Okay, I'm a grown man. Yeah, so, okay. Anyway, this afternoon's activities is that I'm going to send the kids into the water, and they're going to take off all the barnacles on the ladder.
But what about at night? Like, they don't get any time?
Family dinner.
And then what? They go to bed?
Go to bed.
Is it all by candlelight up there?
Almost. Right. Dinner is. I mean, there's electricity, but you know, it's old school. It's like family dinner. We're going to, tonight, ready for this? Tonight, the minister and his family.
Are you serious?
I kid you not. Are going to come over, and you know what? We're going to have dinner, and then we're going to have shepherd's pie, and then you know what we're going to do? Play Dictionary with a Funk and Wagnalls dictionary from the 1940s. I am not kidding you. I will text you pictures of it. How about that? So it's quite difficult to stream anything here.
And then what do? You go down you walk down the street, you stand outside of Boo Radley's house and wonder if he'll show his face. And then you wait for the big trial, right? Is that basically what happens up there?
Yeah. It's like, I'm not kidding. It's you know, but they're trying to get broadband. It's hard to do. Anyway, So
now are you working on a book? What's going on? You know, Myla, basically, your book came up this, it's Starry Night, right? Is that's the name of your book, right? Well, Myla is like, I'm ready to read her book now. And I'm like, I don't think you are. And she goes, I'm a tween. She's turning 10 in like 2 weeks.
It's okay. If you know, there's a little sex in it. But if you explain that, you know, people in their teens sometimes have sex.
Oh, no. She's aware of that.
But, you know, T. Swift has done it all for me.
But it's not that. It's like occasionally she watched one R-rated movie. I can't remember what it was.
What was it?
I don't know. I mean, it was probably like a comedy. Or right. She claims it was like a PG-13 or whatever it is. And she's, you know, she's responsible with that stuff. She's like, I got to tell you something. She went to camp, a sleepaway camp for the first time at the beginning of the year. She said, she came back. She goes, I got to tell you something. I don't want you to get mad. But my friend had Mad Libs, and some of the older girls wrote some very inappropriate things in the Mad Libs. And I want you to know, I didn't participate in it, and I didn't approve of it. I was like,
But I saw it.
And so I just wanted you to know, and I don't want you to get mad about it. I know that it was wrong. And I'm like, all right, well, I appreciate you telling me. I mean, it was, you know, like I think one of the girls had written vagina in there or something, and slang for vagina.
Have you seen Silicon Valley by any chance?
I have not.
Wow, I
don't have any time to watch anything anymore. Right?
Well, it's funny, but it's about, you know, like tech nerds, tech bros.
Yes, well,
know?
No, I'm aware of the show. Yes.
And it's so funny, but it's a little racy, but somehow it's so funny that I don't care. It's like I've lifted all. I don't care that they watch it. And so they just watch it, and then I think it's funny, and they think it's funny. They think it's like, it's because it's potty town to the max.
Mm.
It is like potty.
Well, your
camp.
Boys are older, and they're boys, and that's, you know, that's. You know,
it's fine, right?
Yeah, of course.
Dude,
of course.
If you haven't watched it, and people of the land, it is funny. God, it's funny. And there's this guy, Ehrlich Bachman, who is a wonderful, wonderful character. And I actually love Richard, too. In fact, I love Silicon Valley. I'll say it right now.
All right. Well, I
that
mean,
might be my recommendation. That might be part one of my recommendation.
Wow, that does not speak well if you're coming up with a recommendation as
no,
we
no,
are talking.
No, I just forgot that I loved it so much because I'm waiting for the third season.
Well, wait a second. Now, update me on what's happening with your book first.
Well, you know, as you knew, I had writer's block. Well, I had three ideas that all got rejected.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, rejected. And one was a really good one. Maybe I'm not willing to let that go, actually. Anyway, they got rejected. I got writer's block, and I started thinking to
myself.
Wait,
who rejects these? Your agent?
My editor of Starry Night. I'm
okay.
Like, no, no, no. And I kept writing chapters and outlines and all this stuff. And it's really a lesson in, you know what? Sometimes you just have to keep going back to the drawing board or the chalkboard or whatever. So, but it got rejected so many times that I was like, wow, I sort of have no more ideas, and I guess I'm officially in writer's block. And I would go to bookstores and say, yep, everybody's writing everything, and I don't think anything I have to say is worth the... Well, I said, did I say this to you? I said, I would have a book idea, and then 2 weeks later, I would think, well, it's really only a magazine article. And then, like, 2 weeks after that, I'd be like, it's like a tweet.
Wow.
That's where I was. I was like, I was in a dark place, and I haven't been a writer for long enough, and I'm pretty prolific, to have writer's block. You know, it just usually just came out of me, just, you mm-hmm. know. So I was having writer's block, and I finally gave into it. I was like, I guess just maybe that's it.
You're done.
That's all she wrote, literally. And couple weeks later, I'd say fortnights.
Fortnights, okay.
Yeah, a couple of fortnights later, I was walking to Starbucks, and like six ideas all culminated in one. It was like a, you know, I stopped in the middle of the street and took out my notes function on my, you know,
phone, right?
And sat down and wrote the whole idea.
Wow.
For an adult book.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's going to be called Middle School.
Really?
Yeah,
well, you don't want to let the air out of the tires at this point, do you, or what?
I certainly am not talking about it any more than that. But just for all of those people in the world who... You know, you're rocking along, and then suddenly, you know, it's amazing to me how life is so, like, weirdly predictable. It's like, what did I think? I was just going to get away with writing book after book and never having to stop and think about it, you know, and be have a hard time and, you know, be like, oh, wow, I just don't have really anything to say. It's sort of a...
So is your editor happy with this one?
No, you know what I decided to do, too?
What?
I said, I don't care about editors. I'm just going to write it first, and I'll sell it when it's done.
Not good for you.
So, you know what? I don't even like that thing of, like, selling something before it's done. It's sort of a weird concept to me.
Yeah, you don't need to. Yeah, well, good for you.
I'd rather have some, you know, wouldn't you rather, like, produce a show, have it all ready, and then be like, okay, so here it is.
Oh, definitely.
Sort of an idea.
Definitely. And the thing is, you can't do that with a show because it's just too expensive.
It's too expensive, exactly. But you can do it with a book because, you know.
It's just your own.
It's just you and your little machine.
There it is, folks. There's your inspiration for the week. And now, ladies and gentlemen, is your recommendation.
Well, here, it's a little self-promotional, I have to say.
Ooh.
But, I know. But it's kind of cool, too, because it is the 25th, this month, August 7th. Metropolitan is being re-released.
Wait a second. Wait. Say that again. This is the 25th year?
Yes.
You're
This month is the 25th anniversary of Metropolitan, of when it came out at the Paris Theater. And it's being re-released, and it's going to be in theaters.
Oh my God, that's exciting!
Isn't that cool? And it's like a little cult classic now. So I figured, well, it's a cool independent movie. It was made for $200,000, you know, 25 years ago. It holds up. It really does. I just saw it's like a sort of beautiful little love story.
People should know, this is Whit Stillman's movie, right? It was shot
movie.
And I guess it was shot in 1990.
Yep.
And it is
all cast of unknowns.
Mm-hmm. One of them being Isabel Gillies.
Right.
The 19 years old. Wow.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Independent film was not really a thing.
No.
No one really, like, maybe Sex, Lies, and Videotape came out around
Right around that time.
And the
funny thing is, the Paris is one of the few places like Cassavetes, right?
Right.
I mean, that theater.
Cassavetes was before it, but didn't have the same kind of audience that then independent film after Robert Redford did Sundance. And, you know, I think it was maybe the second year of Sundance, I don't think it was the first year. I think it was the second year. So people weren't as versed, like Angelica Film Festival.
Right.
And film, it all didn't exist.
That's right.
So it was like when we were reading this really great script that was then, and I mean, there was Jim Jarmusch and everything like that, but you had to be pretty way far in.
You had to know what was going on. So now give us, all right, so is there going to be, like, are you going to be going to the Paris? Is there going to be some type of event or something?
There's going to be an event, not the Paris, but I think it's at the Lincoln Plaza. I think it's in L.A., New York, and it's August 7th, I think it comes out. And there was, like, Vanity Fair is doing a thing on it.
And so this is obviously it's one of those Criterion DVDs. You can get it on Netflix, I presume.
Yes, you can also get it on Amazon, I think. And it's really a heady movie, but it's very sweet. And it's about, you know, it's about the sort of bourgeois class, but not really. It's kind of like, it's sort of like Edith Wharton, sort of, they talk, it's very, interesting dialogue, and it was a wonderful script that was then nominated for an Academy Award.
And then Whit Stillman did a couple of movies, like with Eigenman and I think Nichols, right? Taylor Nichols,
yep.
Like they
and
did
Taylor
like Barcelona, was it? Or
yep, wait, and that... Last Days of Disco.
Okay.
And those are sort of a trilogy.
And so what's up with what, now? Where are the people in that film? Are they like Eigenman? What, like, is he still acting? Like, I would run into him back in this sort of the sitcom days. We occasionally find each other on a plane or something like that with each other.
Yeah. So I just saw everybody because we just did this shoot for Vanity Fair, and that's going to be in the September issue. And with the whole cast 25 years later. And the crazy thing is that, first of all, everyone looked exactly the same to me. I think maybe we look old to other people, but our brains just see each other as the same. And so Chris is doing a lot of producing and writing and acting. He was also, he was in Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh, okay.
He was a principal. He's done a ton of stuff. And then Taylor Nichols is also acting, and he's in a ton of things. You see him all over the place. He's in a lot of big, big, big commercials sometimes.
Uh-huh.
But he does a lot of independent film and all that stuff. He's a big actor. And then one of the Allison Rutledge producers, she's a lawyer. I mean, a lot of people left the business. Ed Clemens, who played Tom, the main character, who was a West Sider, is a priest.
So what? Wow.
Yeah, it was really, really cool, and everyone was. It was just so great to see everybody, and it was neat. It was cool, but the film, I think, really holds up, which is bizarre after 25 years.
Yeah, that's not easy. That is not easy to achieve that. Well, I mean, folks, there you have it. I think that's a good... I don't know why you were so hesitant about that.
I was embarrassed because it's a little self-serving because I was in it.
Well, I mean, what? You're not going to get paid. You're not still getting paid from it, are you?
Like no, 32 no. Cents? I just, you know, I don't... And I'm 18 in it.
Wow.
So it's... And you want to... It's crazy. So anyway... That is cool, and you can go and see it and rent it, and I mean whatever, rent it on Amazon or yeah, so that was that. Everyone's getting a little bit older.
Tell me about
25 years.
Tell me about it.
Gosh.
All right, Isabel, it was a pleasure to catch up with you.
Is everybody good in that office?
You know who has a son now?
Who?
Matt.
What?
You didn't know he was pregnant?
Wait a minute, are you kidding?
No, Matt Binder has a son.
Yes, I do.
What's his name?
Ezra.
Oh, that's so... Mazel, that's so great!
Thank
when
you, Isabel.
When was he born?
July 9th.
Oh, no, come on. How did I not even know that?
It's been a while since
you just got to listen to the show,
Ezra.
Isabel. I mean, that's... There you go.
Ezra! I'll have to send a baby present.
Well, we can do it to the registry.
Is he like, just bopping along? It's July 9th. He's little.
Yeah, he's 2 weeks yesterday.
Oh, my goodness gracious. When is he going to make his debut on the show?
I don't know. We'll see
now
when...
Now you really have
we're
to
in negotiations right now.
We'll see when next Majority Report CEO Myla Cedar hires him.
That's right.
Listen to me. You're a father now. You got to quit that hard stuff.
Oh, here we go. All right, Isabel. It was great talking to you.
Don't get me going, Papa.
All right.
All right.
All right, we'll be in touch.
Well, congratulations. What a wonderful news. All right, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.
See you later.
Bye. See you next time.
All right, folks. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll go and do... we'll just a little added bonus show today, and then we will be presenting our first Ask the Intern, and the hashtag will be Ask Noah on Twitter. Don't start asking for... Well, yeah, I guess you could start loading up questions now if you want, because we'll be able to check it out. But we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half, number 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. You know the deal, folks. We rely on your memberships. If you can afford to become a member, please do at majority.fm. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Don't forget that harrys.com. If it's the first time you're purchasing a shaving utensil, coupon code MAJORITY, you get their starter kit for $10. Are you kidding me? No? Why are you talking to both sides of the conversation, Sam? I just am. Okay. Talk to you later. All right, talk to you later. If you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. 646-257-3920 is the number. You can IM me. Get the app. I know 1,000 of you have because you're all... we have a ton of IMs. Thousands of you, I should say. All right, we'll be right back.